All right, welcome back, Flashback fans, to another Famicom Flashbacks podcast, precious.
Whoa.
It's me, Brandon, with Matt.
That would be me.
And for some reason, Shane's here again.
What's up?
I like how, as me and Matt are really trying to kick up the professional end of the podcast, the videos. Shane shows up, and he's eating Taco Bell in the corner.
Oh, yeah. I call him Bucktooth Billy.
My gosh. But, you know, I think Matt kind of adopted him or something, so yeah. it's just the way it is.
I feel bad for white trash.
But on a positive note, he does know a lot about Lord of the Rings, which is our topic for today's podcast.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking a little bit at Lord of the Rings, even talking a little bit about great Lord of the Rings video games. But we're going to hold off on that for a little bit. We're going to hold that off until later in the show. First, we want to just talk about the franchise itself. You know, obviously, Lord of the Rings, if you were just, like, delving into the realm of fantasy and you've never heard of Lord of the Rings before, first of all, that's insane to me. But Lord of the Rings are, in my opinion, and many of people's opinion, some of the greatest works of fantasy. Probably my favorite work of fantasy that I've ever read.
Yeah.
They're just it's an amazing story. The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings.
Me the amount. I mean, you read a lot of like fantasy stories. Like, yeah, they have a good detail, but there is every like minute detail is explained in these series. I mean, it's just unbelievable the depth that came out of this person's head.
The backs of the books is just pages upon pages of just stuff that wasn't
history.
Yeah, just history about Middle Earth.
Yeah, he's got a serious history base for his world that he created, and that's awesome. And he doesn't just have it; he gives it to you.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of fantasy writers, they have a history, you know, that they reference from time to time, but he actually goes into detail, and you know, he'll say something about a thing and then give the history behind it.
And even does, like, he has, like, maps drawn out, I mean, to make you, like, really visualize and really, like, become part of the story.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's uncanny. I mean, the fact, you know, there's a lot of people who, you look at, like, people who base stories off of actual history. You know, when people actually, write books that's based off of history, they have to do a lot of studying. This guy, he based stuff off of history that wasn't even, like, real. I mean, he had to create the stuff himself. I mean, just the Tolkien's mind, I mean, he just must have been a genius.
Okay. The amount of time he must have spent writing. Does anybody know how long it took him to write? Like, is there actually documentation how long it took him to write
his books? Well, I don't know for a fact, but I know, like, some of the books even got rewritten as he was going through the series. I know, from what I understand from some of the things I've read and some of the features I've seen in the movies, when he was writing The Lord of the Rings and then eventually went, you know, started to develop Lord of the Rings, obviously he wrote The Hobbit first. Some of the chapters in The Hobbit, I guess, ended up changing once he wrote Lord of the Rings because he knew certain characters were more important. You know, Gollum, there's a lot of stuff with Gollum and the Ring kind of developed into this really important thing. So he went back and rewrote some of those chapters, which is kind of interesting.
It's the Silmarillion, The Hobbit, and then the three Lord of the Rings books, right?
Yeah, well, the Silmarillion is really, it's got stories from throughout the history of Middle Earth.
And that's the first age of the Silmarillion, right?
I think there's I mean, I don't want to place it into one time frame, whereas The Hobbit, you know, is a chronological story. It tells you his Bilbo's whole adventures. Same with Lord of the Rings. It tells the Fellowship's adventures and as they split off. Where the Silmarillion has multiple stories of, like, Beren and Lúthien, you know, the first man and elf woman that got together and those type of things. There's lots of different stories in that book, and it's just kind of all over.
But it's supposed to take place a good while before The Hobbit, right? Like several ages prior.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
The Hobbit is the third age or fourth age?
I have trouble keeping track of the different ages. Yeah.
Because that's what the game.
That's right. There is a game called The Third Age that we'll be talking about a little bit later. But you know, a lot of the fans might be wondering, you know, why are these guys going into books and movies? I mean, these are video game guys. But one of the things we're going to be covering over the course of our new theme that we're going into you know, here at the beginning when we're looking at Lord of the Rings, is the fact that Lord of the Rings really has inspired a variety of fantasy elements across many media.
Absolutely.
Not just books and film, but even video games. There's a lot of stuff in video games. You
video
know.
Games, tabletops, I mean, you name
tabletops,
it.
Tabletops, definitely. I mean, a lot of tabletops.
Without Lord of the Rings, who knows what today's gaming and market would
just a huge impact. I mean,
even
and a lot of Zelda fans might be offended because they like to talk about the originality of the series, but there are certain elements that are very similar.
Oh, absolutely.
To Lord of the Rings, and I'd be surprised if there wasn't at least a little inspiration there. You know, especially even like Ocarina of Time. You know, and looking at some of the stuff in there, like how Link comes from this small village of these kind of halfling like creatures, and you know, instead of Mount Doom, you have Death Mountain, and there's a lot of just similar elements. And
you can even say that the sword that killed Sauron in the beginning is the Master Sword, because it gets reforged, and it's what,
Elendil, and then the Master Sword. Yeah, I mean,
the sword is still sharp.
That's a very good impression.
That was Boromir, right? Yeah.
We have some awesome impressions of Lord of the Rings characters. Let me just say that first.
I'm an actor, so what do you expect?
But yeah, the elements from these books have really gone on to inspire a great number of media, and obviously film, because, I mean, not only do you have movies that are inspired by Lord of the Rings, but you have the actual Lord of the Rings films, which I think are amazing, and I think all of us here think are amazing.
Yeah. I can't believe that I didn't know. See, I'm not a reader. Right. I don't read books. I've tried. I can't get into it. But I didn't even hear about Lord of the Rings until high school.
Oh, really?
Until late in high school. My dad was like, I just watched a movie. You'll really enjoy it. It's Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, let me watch it. And I'm just like, this is awesome. Yeah. I was playing Dark Age of Camelot. It's an MMO on the PC at the time. And he was like, Mithril armor. I was like, Mithril armor? That's what my guy's wearing right now. This is so cool.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And I did some research and I was like, realized that this was huge. Like, without this, the game I was playing wouldn't exist. This armor. All this kind of stuff, it's just... It blew my mind,
and that's a type of metal that shows up in a variety of different games and stuff like that, and that's created by Tolkien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I personally think that Lord of the Rings is without doubt, hands down, the most pivotal fantasy.
Yeah.
Franchise.
Material.
Ever.
Yeah.
Period.
No, I would agree, and I think, like I said, I mean, it's proven by the fact that so many people have been inspired by it. And let's be honest, I mean, Tolkien, he took a lot of his ideas from actual mythology, and even like other stories like Beowulf and stuff like that. So, like, the fact that people are borrowing from Tolkien is not a huge deal, because he really borrowed from a lot of different elements from other things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's just amazing what he was able to do. And
I think probably the coolest thing that came out of, like, that obviously was taken from Tolkien would be Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yeah.
It is a,
there's a lot of stuff.
I mean, they
in
just
there.
It's like they took that world and made it into a tabletop, and it's just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, there's a, I'm a big fantasy reader. I like to read a lot, and I read a lot of books from the Dragonlance.
Okay.
It says Dragonlance right on the book.
Right.
And it's basically they write books, but they role play it in D&D.
Okay.
Before writing it, they create characters and things like that, and a lot of people, if you read, if you read fantasy, you've probably heard of Raistlin. He was just ridiculously infamous mage.
Right.
And in the book that they wrote explaining his past and his history, in the foreword or the prologue or whatever, they talked about how they had role played this whole thing, and how the person that they had playing him did an amazing job.
Wow.
That they really immersed themselves in it. They were wearing robes, and they were using the correct voice and everything like that. Totally in character. And
yeah,
I thought it was really cool how they got into all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely. So you guys would say the tabletop, D&D, that there's just an outstanding reference to Tolkien's work in that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can see. I mean, I'm a big... I got all the books and manuals and stuff like that. I mean, you flip through it. I mean, orcs, goblins. Okay. I mean, everything. I mean, trants. I mean, you have... I mean, just everything that... I mean, obviously there's... But, I mean, it's just a huge influence from Tolkien's work.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's awesome to be able to... Just to play that out, you know? And it's amazing. It's amazing to me.
And obviously with the movies, I mean, they were really true to his work. Peter Jackson did a wonderful job in the films of staying true to Tolkien. I know we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the things when we were preparing for this, you know, some of the things that may have kind of been changed over time, but are through the course of developing those movies, because there's no way that you're fitting everything that Tolkien wrote into 3 movies, 25 movies, 107 movies. I mean,
yeah.
There's just no way. I mean, he just wrote a ridiculous amount. Mm-hmm. For one man to create a mythology is just crazy. But yeah. those films really, to me, is actually my favorite film franchise. Yeah. I just, you know, number one, you know, I was, when you know, Star Wars had already been coming out by the time I was born. None of us were old enough here to be there when Star Wars first began. So I didn't, you know, I got to relive that.
Yeah.
Or live that for the first time as other people were kind of reliving it. But I think what's cool for all of us is that Lord of the Rings was the major franchise of our generation.
Yeah.
You know, just to see that happen, it's just, you know, I can't go into it enough. I mean, I love Lord of the Rings.
Well, and like you said, I really like it that they stayed true to the story. You know,
yeah.
They didn't try to change a bunch of crap and throw things out.
Yeah.
You know, bring in stuff that was never there to begin with. And
yeah.
And case in point here, Harry Potter. I'm sorry, like they did okay in the first movie, and then from there it just like went downhill. They just started taking stuff out.
Oh, so there was a lot changed in those. Yeah.
You know, and,
interesting.
Yeah, because I read all those books too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first got into them, I had absolutely refused to read them.
Right.
Because I was like, that's little kid crap.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I ended up reading them, and they were really good. They're
well,
good
it's cool. It's cool. I mean, obviously, you know, what is it? J.K. Rowling?
Mm-hmm.
She obviously took a lot of things from Lord of the Rings as well. And I mean, I shouldn't say took. Borrowed a lot of ideas, which is fine. You know, like, Dumbledore definitely has some serious Gandalf elements. But I actually kind of like, you know, I think the strongest thing for me is the idea that the books grew up with the readers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, in a lot of ways, that's kind of what Lord of the Rings did with The Hobbit. The Hobbit is definitely more of a kid-friendly book, you know, an advanced kid, but a kid-friendly book.
It's much easier to read
than Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings definitely grows up.
And stuff like
yes,
that. And
yeah.
It's more lively.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of another similar idea there. I think that's a really smart way to do it, is just have the films, or have the books in this case, grow up with your audience. I think it's really a smart way of doing it. I think it's really kind of cool.
I agree.
But, yeah, I mean, the Lord of the Rings films, you know, it's interesting that we had Lord of the Rings made first, and now we're going back and having the Hobbit films. I hope that the prequel element, in this case, blows Star Wars out of the water. I really do. I hope the Hobbit prequels are just, they stand up as just being, like, awesome. I mean, I know that the source material is already there, so it's very, very different thing to talk about, but, I, you know.
Yeah. Well, The Hobbit was actually a cartoon. They made a cartoon
That's true.
Movie of The Hobbit. I saw that, I think I saw it in school, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I showed it in school. But, you know, it was a cartoon, and because it's more kid-friendly and stuff like that,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of goofy and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I have the cartoon, and I, you know, because it's an animated version of the film, and because it's only one film and all that, I mean, there's so many cool parts in the story of The Hobbit that didn't make it in there. I'm a huge fan of I think it's a Boren, the dude, he's like a werebear. There's a dude who, like, will go out at night and shapeshift into, like, a bear. And I always was a really cool... And when they were making the new Hobbit film, when they finally announced that, hey, we have someone playing the part of this character, that made me so excited, because it was just like, oh, my favorite character in that book is making it into film. They didn't cut it. And then they're like, oh, but it's okay, because we're making 2 films. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, 2 Hobbit films. Then months progress, and then I was like, you know what? we need more time. I got to do three films. And then it was just like, I came over here and punched Matt in the face, and he was lying on the ground.
Is this the first time this has ever been done? One movie is being split into three parts?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, like, one book. I mean, you think, like, okay, Twilight, that's multiple books. Harry Potter, multiple books.
I can't think of another time that has happened.
Like, The Hobbit, one book being split. And The Hobbit's not that long. I mean, it's much shorter than Fellowship and especially Return of the King. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're making it into three movies, I'm very excited, but I'm also...
A little timid.
Yeah, because I don't want them to throw a bunch of trash. Like in the third one, we were discussing, like, you know, the first movie is going to take you up to a certain point. That's like halfway through the book. Unless the second movie is only going to focus on that middle section and that's it.
Yeah.
But just flesh that out and a lot of fighting, a lot of combat. Yeah. And the third one will just finish it out. But, I mean, if they go through the second movie and you're almost near the end, it's like... All right, what are you going to do for that? Because you know each one's going to be close to 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, last one's not going to be like, all right,
well, we already saw this first one, which is called Unexpected Journey.
Yeah.
Right? That one is going to be pushing 3 hours. We already know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that the amount of detail and history and stuff like that Tolkien puts into his writing will make it easier for them to, you know, lay it out. If they're going to do three movies and, you know, they're all, you know, almost 3 hours or so, then they've got plenty of time. They don't have to remove things. Right. You know, that way, I think what they're trying to do there is try to bring in the rest of the people, you know, who were like, I didn't like it that they left this out. Well, now we're making three movies for one book. We're not leaving anything out.
There is definitely, from what I've read, there's going to be a lot of different elements from the back of the books, from the, from all his additional content that he's produced. There's going to be a lot of that elements that make it in there, and I think that's just the coolest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't remember. I remember in The Hobbit, he does go to Rivendell in the story, but I don't remember him seeing the Sword of Ilindale to see Narsil. I don't remember him seeing that in the book, but in the trailer for the movie, they actually show it. They actually show him seeing it.
I thought that. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I read the book.
Yeah.
I feel like he may have seen it in passing.
Oh, maybe.
You know, but, and that's, you know, that may be just showing right there.
It could just be giving people a point of reference, just being like, walking by, just be like, oh, he's in that same spot, but so much earlier in time.
Right.
You know, like, just doing that just to...
Well, it could also be, you know, he went to Rivendell, so I mean...
Yes, he did.
You know, there's nothing saying in the book that he absolutely didn't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's...
No. I think actually
at some point he may have just walked by. He just didn't describe it in detail in the book. You know,
but like, I think potentially the movies have the benefit of taking all the source material and making an even stronger, closer knit Middle Earth than even the books did, which is just outstanding. I mean, let me ask you guys: how was it for you as they started to announce some of the actors returning? What were some of your thoughts on that? Who are you most excited to see returning?
Probably Gandalf. I was very happy that I can't see anybody else playing that role, you know, and especially because I think the relationship between Bilbo and Gandalf is so awesome.
Yeah.
I just think if you were just I understand that you can't have Ian McKellen did the one, right? I understand you can't bring him back, but the fact that they're keeping Gandalf the same.
Ian Holmes was Bilbo. Ian McKellen
is Gandalf. Okay, yes. They're both Ian. Okay.
Yeah, they're both Ians. And what was cool in Fellowship is that the two of them, like the way they interacted, and just a few scenes that both Bilbo and Gandalf were in, there was already, you could tell there was a friendship there.
Yeah.
You know, when they're sitting there smoking and you got the little rings, which actually, interestingly enough, that scene where they're smoking with the ship that sails through, that's actually from The Hobbit. That's not from Lord of the Rings. So that scene was actually taken from The Hobbit, and then they used it in that film. So I just thought that was kind of interesting, and now we're getting Hobbit movies, so maybe there'll be another reference there in heaven.
I thought one of the coolest parts in Fellowship is when he's telling the story to the kids, and it's about how the trolls got turned to stone.
Right.
You know, I just thought that was so, I mean, if you never read it, you're just like, okay, but having read The Hobbit, one of the few books I've actually read, I'm just like, that is so cool that they just do that in there.
And not only that, but in the extended cuts, there was actually a scene where they camped out
And Sam was like, look, Frodo, Mr. Bilbo's
trolls. Mr. Bilbo's trolls, and he had the giant troll. And he, yeah, okay, that's a good Frodo impression. If you don't remember the film, Frodo at that point had been stabbed by one of the Nazgul.
Yeah.
You know, the I think it was the head Nazgul.
He was stabbed by Marlowe Blade.
Witch King.
Good. I'm liking these impressions. How about you, Shane? Like, was there? How exciting was it for you to see some of these guys return? Was there a specific one that stood out for you?
I agree with Matt. Seeing the guy who plays Gandalf come back is a great thing because, I tune it again. Harry Potter. The guy that they had playing Dumbledore first, I think he died though.
He did.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The guy from Gladiator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy was Dumbledore.
Right.
The guy that they had play him after that,
yeah.
I didn't really feel it with him.
Right.
You know, he's too young.
Yeah.
Plus, when they announced that Dumbledore was now gay, the original Dumbledore, I was like, no, that dude is not gay.
No. You don't know
he's
that.
He's in Gladiator.
Because no one in Gladiator was gay.
I'm sure in a Hollywood movie you can't find one guy. There was a guy who was into incest, but there was
yes, thank you. There was actually a character that he was in the Senate, and he had lots of little boys working around his.
That's just because they were so energetic and ready to go.
I mean, come on, the movie was about Romans. You know there was a couple gay dudes, and I don't mean that as a negative, I'm saying that as a positive. They were very open-minded society.
Romantic Romans?
Romantic Romans.
Boom. The biggest thing that I'm excited about, surprisingly enough, because this is usually Matt's area, the soundtrack. I want this soundtrack so bad.
Oh.
For The Hobbit?
Yes.
Oh, dude, yeah, absolutely. Oh,
well, me and Matt were just talking about this when they showed that first trailer, and you're like, oh, this is cool. They're bringing us back in this world. And there's a couple scenes in Lord of the Rings where they sing some of the songs. Mm. But when they start singing that Misty Mountain songs,
it's just all low, dwarfs, and then they start doing like the slow, slow pants.
And then they get through the first lyrics, and then blah 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 blah, and then just get the heavy brass noise.
I want to cry.
We are sitting here talking about it, I'm getting goosebumps.
I mean, when I first heard they announced The Hobbit, I was just like, the one thing I wanted to make sure they kept is please keep those musical numbers.
Yes.
Like, in the book, they were so entertaining, but, like, please translate them well.
Right.
And it's just going to do such a phenomenal... Even in the Fellowship, like, the music he put in there, it was so fitting. It wasn't like... Yeah. Even, like, Aragorn, when he sings, I'm not just like... Yeah, you know, it has such an awesome thing. And when Pippin. When he's singing, it's so well done. You know,
that was another.
They don't
one
have
we
the best
about,
voice, but the way he did it just captured that moment. And I think it's gonna do the same thing in The Hobbit.
Well, and I think it's really great that they didn't just pick a bunch of people who had great singing voices and stuff like that, or voiceover when they're singing or anything like that. Because, when you think about times from back then, people just sang.
Yeah.
They didn't care what the hell your voice sounded like,
Yeah.
You were having a good time, it was an expression of emotion.
Yeah. Well, that was the cool thing about the extended cuts, too, because you got a couple more songs in some of the films, There's a bar scene in the third one where Pippin and Merry are dancing on the table that wasn't in the original theatrical cut. But me and Matt, going back to what he was saying about Pippin singing, we were just talking about that last night, and Big Girl, she's another huge fan of the Lord of the Rings films, which is amazing because she doesn't necessarily love long films, nor does she necessarily love fantasy films. Mm-hmm. And she got into it slowly, but I mean now she just recognized them being amazing films. Which is hard to change Big Girl's mind. I'm not sure if you noticed that, M-Trip.
Yeah.
So the fact that she eventually got
she's
to the
a
point
rock.
Where she... Yeah, she is a rock. That's true. That is the one scene she cannot watch is the scene where Pippin's singing. And it's not because Pippin's singing is bad, but it literally, as me and Matt were talking about last night, it literally is the most graphic scene in all the Lord of the Rings films. And it doesn't really show anything. It's this massacre of these. It's in Return of the King. This massacre of
the soldiers of
Minas Tirith, and you don't get to see anything. You get to see the arrows leave the orcs and their bows, but you just see the steward eating this these food and this tomato, and the way he eats is so violent and gross that it's like, it's literally probably the next the most disturbing scene in Lord of the Rings films, next to Bilbo and Rivendell trying to take the ring back from Frodo.
That scene was just... It was awesome. It was just so well done.
It really strikes a chord, you know, that the massacre didn't have to happen.
Yeah.
That, you know, Captain Messy Eater is...
Captain Messy Eater!
The most selfish ass.
And he's just... Well, but you remember, at that point, in the books, he was another one who had... And I'm forgetting what the orbs were called,
The Lost Sea... No, the Sea Stone, Lost Sea Stones?
Well, they're Seeing Stones, but they have actual names, and I don't remember what the names are. But Saruman had one, and they didn't know... They were lost, so they didn't know who had them, and obviously Sauron had one.
Yeah.
So he was... So if you use it, they can see what you're doing as well, and the steward had one as well. And you never really see... I don't think you ever see it in the films. No, you don't.
No.
But that's really the main reason why he went kind of nuts, is because he'd used the Seeing Stone... And Sauron would be sending these horrible images of what was going to happen to Minas Tirith to him, and he just lost it. And he started wanting the ring and thought that would be the only way. And that, you know, that ended up, it's his fault that Boromir, his favorite son, died, because he sent him off to try to take the ring.
Yeah.
He corrupted his own son. And then, obviously, he sent Faramir to his death, and Faramir, luckily enough, did not actually die.
Yeah.
But he sent him out to that massacre, so he was a horrible father. I'm just gonna say it.
Yes. Well, and a horrible steward. It sucks because he started off as such a great guy, and then, you know, once he started using the orb, it was just done. You know.
I love that scene in the film. The good way to characterize him is the fact that when you first see him, he's sitting on that little chair with the throne behind him.
Yes.
So it's like, this guy, he's not king, and his entire career, he's had to sit on the small chair in front of a really large empty chair.
The throne of Gondor is mine!
Yeah.
No one else's!
Yeah. The throne of Gondor is mine, or at least it's right behind me.
Yeah.
No one's sitting
in front of it.
I'll be watching you. Don't you try to sit there.
The best scene, I mean, part of that movie that just gives me the goosebumps. Now, whenever there's like a big war going on, I get like so like immersed in it, and like to the point where I just want to cry.
Right.
I'm just like, I love it. I think that the part that just breaks me up all the time is right when the Riders of Rohan show up and they start charging, they start flanking them, and they're all riding in. There's just one guy that they focus on for like 3 seconds. He's just like, shaking his neck and just riding so hard. And he's just like so pissed off. I'm just like, that dude's going to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just all these guys riding, and they just show on him. He's just like so passionate. Just want to like, it just slays me every time I see it.
It's just like William Wallace with Mel Gibson's Scream.
Okay? Yeah.
Mel Gibson has the most violent, like, soul-wrenching scream. Because he just, like, he gives every single thing.
Yeah, that's true. He is very emotional.
Like,
yeah.
I always like... He's about to vomit.
if we're picking out, like, characters in the background, or characters that just show up, I always like the guy in the Battle of Helm's Deep, the guy who's missing an eye. He was an extra that Peter Jackson found, and that was in the whole crowd. And he's wearing like an eye patch or something like that. And Peter Jenkins just said, "Hey, well, can we shoot a scene of you just screaming with your eye exposed?" And the guy said it was totally therapeutic. He was always so like embarrassed of this what was kind of a deformity, and to kind of showcase in a film, it was very, very therapeutic to him. And I always thought that was a cool scene where he's like, and you just see this gash, you know, this open.
That's cool. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I thought that one was kind of neat.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, I would do anything to be an extra in one of those films. That would have been awesome. I wish
I mean anything.
I want to be a dwarf. I mean, I'm short enough.
Well, you could.
You're wide enough.
You kind of have actually. You have.
You're short. You're stocky and you're greedy, so you're perfect.
You actually kind of have hobbit features. You know that? You kind of do.
Hobbits kinda got can't grow good enough beards.
That's true. You do have an awesome beard. I forgot about that.
Well, what they do, they just shave their feet and put it on their face.
True, true. I've seen Shane's feet, so he would make a good Hobbit.
True. Gross.
Yeah, but no, favorite movie out of the three so far? You know, we'll call them the original three.
Fellowship for me.
Return of the King. I love Return of the King.
Interesting. And I'm Two Towers just based off of the fact I love the extended cut. Because the extended cut was, out of all of the extended cuts, that's the one that added the most. You got all the trees moving into Helm's Deep and taking out the orcs and all that stuff.
It's just, well, one, I love Boromir.
Yeah.
And just the way he goes. And two, like I said, I knew nothing about the series. And this movie just sucked me in. So watching it again just brings me back to, it just, you know, it introduced me to a whole new world, you know.
I love that scene.
A whole new world. Oh,
okay. I love that scene where Pippin has to describe Boromir's death to his father. And he's like, you know, how is it that you live and my son is dead? And he basically says, you know, and this is paraphrasing, obviously, he's like, you know, even one arrow can take down a man, and your son was taken, was hit by many, or something along the line.
Yeah.
It's just a really well way to describe it, you know, like to have to describe to someone's dad how their child had been.
But that's a man right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get shot with an arrow.
You get fighting,
you're just like, oh man, I'm gonna die. But he's just like, nope, I got two hobbits here. I need to continue annihilating, and just gets up. Oh, got another arrow. No, I'm not done yet. Instead of dual wielding, I'm just gonna hold this giant sword in one hand, and I'm still gonna stab multiple people.
Yeah.
And then one more. Yep, I'm still gonna keep on going. Yeah. And that's just it. Just the fact that he just totally redeemed himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's just such an awesome way to end that character out.
One of the nice things too is that in a franchise of films that are obviously epics. And, I mean, obviously, a lot of the people want to go to these are people like Matt, where they want to see huge fights. You really don't have that in Fellowship. But they went through and added that all that information at the beginning about, you know, the history of Middle-earth.
Which was so awesome.
And then you got that huge fight of all these elves against Sauron in his body form.
I tell you, elves in battle attire is badass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it looked like it was the two-sided. They had a staff with the dual blades on either side, and then they have these huge, like, kite shields, and just like, oh my god, it's just, that is intimidation right there.
I'm sorry, I can't believe I can't remember his name, but, the main elf, older guy.
The main elf of the guy, is that what you said?
Elf, the main elf. What's his name?
Lord Elrond.
Elrond, okay. There you go. I knew it was an E. I love where he's like directing a battle, and there's like an arrow that flies past his face and
right
like
past
blows
his
hair over.
Yeah,
I'm just like, that guy's a badass.
Yeah, I mean, I think each of us kind of has our as we were saying, our favorite film. Matt with Fellowship, me with Two Towers, Shane over there with Return of the King. Return of the King was longest.
Yeah.
especially with the extended cut.
Yeah, that's. I mean, come on, who talks about the theatrical version? If you're going to talk about it, you're talking about the extended.
That's true.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. But, you guys mentioned before, you know, obviously Gandalf was the big deal for the return. I did want to say, though, you know, when I was putting together kind of my list in my head of who I want to return, Gandalf was number one. You know who number two was?
Legolas?
No.
Oh.
Andy Serkis.
Oh, yeah, Gollum.
Because his Gollum is just the quintessential Gollum. If they had to cast somebody, they would have really had to found somebody who would have tried to just mimic what he was doing in the film.
Well, I mean, he made that character and basically revolutionized that technology. I mean, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah, definitely. Very, very excited about, Hugo Weaving who played Elrond?
Yes.
Very excited about that one. That one was a big deal because obviously there's a character that a big important character that shows up in The Hobbit and in The Lord of the Rings.
Is Liv Tyler coming back too?
I don't know because I don't know her character's not really in The Hobbit. But interesting little side note though that you bring her up in one of the original cuts. You know when we're talking about staying true to the source material, they in one of the original screenplay or one of the original versions they had of the film, they were going to have her battling at Helm's Deep with the rest of the crew.
Really?
Just because you didn't really have any shots of Aragorn and her together, so it's hard to build that romance. But they did so with like more like a dream sequence in the film.
Yeah, definitely.
But fans had such an outrage at the idea of her character fighting in a battle that just just they just went back to the original story because
they could have used elven magic and just detonated all their faces.
Well, there were elves in Helm's Deep in that battle, remember? And that was pretty cool when they showed up too.
Yeah,
that was a pretty cool scene. Yeah. But you know, we've been talking a lot about these movies. Obviously, we love these movies. It might be kind of fun to get like an outsider's perspective on some of these films. So, Matt, you got anyone in mind?
Only person I can think of who knows actually what he's talking about would probably be Newt.
Newt Wallen. Yeah, Newt. No, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
You can give him a call.
I will give it a try.
Beep, boop, boop. Beep, bop, boop, boop, boop. Ring, ring. Okay, good. All right, Flashback fans, so we have our good friend Newt Wallen on the phone. And Newt, we were just hoping we could kind of get some of your thoughts on Lord of the Rings, and specifically some of the stuff, you know, that Peter Jackson did with the films, and being that you are so into film and movies, what were some of your thoughts seeing those movies for the first time?
Man, I remember, I mean, look, I'm going to lose my geek card because I've never read any of the books.
Okay.
You know, I know about them, I know the little, you know, little intricacies of them, but I've never read them. So I went into the movies not really remembering the 70s cartoons as well. I definitely remember the Leonard Nimoy song. That's the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
But
that's what Bilbo... What is the song again?
They were... Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's that song again from Leonard Nimoy? I can't remember what the...
I don't know. I can't remember the lyrics off the top of my head. I just woke up, guys.
I can't remember. I remember it was pretty hilarious, though.
Leonard Nimoy wrote this song, The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins, in like the, I guess it would be probably the early 70s, you know, the video is pretty fantastic. You can find it on YouTube. But
yeah.
I just thought it was really cool that they made Fellowship, Two Towers, and Return of the King as literally they made three and a half hour movies at the same time.
Right.
And they gave it to Peter Jackson, who at that point, you know, American moviegoers, what do they know Peter Jackson from? Like The Frighteners?
They
didn't make any money. I'm a huge fan of Peter Jackson because of Meet the Feebles and, you know, Dead Alive and Heavenly Creatures, which is, you know, just an amazing film. For them to give him that much money and that tentpole franchise, that's pretty ballsy of them. And,
right.
You know, my favorite of the three of them is Fellowship.
Right.
I feel like that's the only one that felt like a full film. You know,
right.
I don't know. I'm a huge fan of that movie. I'm a huge fan of all three because of the mixing of matte paintings and CGI and physical environment it was like what Star Wars the prequels should have been, which is mixing all the tools that made the original three good and updating the technology instead of just saying, we're going to film everything in front of a blue screen.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, obviously there's some huge sets built for the Lord of the Rings films. You know, Peter Jackson, he really has a good, like, horror sensibility, too. What were your feelings? I know you like a lot of good, like, horror stuff. What were kind of your thoughts on the way he was able to bring some of that into the films?
I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you can't have Frodo walking through Helm's Deep with a lawnmower and like baby orcs and stuff like that, like in Dead Alive. But I think for a PG-13 movie, you know, because they weren't, you know, most of the violence that happened, like the really big violence, happened towards like creatures, so you can get away with showing a lot more. But they definitely pushed PG-13, I feel like, you know, as far as you could push it.
Right.
And the monsters are so cool looking. That's what bothers me about the new one, is that Guillermo del Toro was supposed to direct it.
Yeah.
And everything I know about The Hobbit is far more elemental, and that del Toro's bread and butter is just elemental horror and fantasy. And I was upset to see that he left the project, but I mean, if you had to leave it in anyone's hands, I think leaving it in Peter Jackson's hands isn't so bad. That's like, you know, do I like vaginal sex or oral sex? Like, oh, don't make me choose.
What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts there on The Hobbit coming out? Do you think it's going to stand up with the Lord of the Rings, or?
I like everything I've seen about it, the only thing that worries me is the, they said that the frame rate takes time to get used to. Okay. So I'm interested to see how that's going to work. And then they shot the entire thing, you know, they shot it in 3D, which, okay, when something's shot in 3D, I don't have as big a problem with it, but I feel like these movies are going to make money anyway, so I don't really know if they needed to do that little, you know, we need to make that extra $4 and put it in 3D.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I guess MGM went out of business, and that's what held up the movie for so long.
Right.
Tolkien's, like, descendants are asking for a crazy money, so, you know what, I can't fault them now. Go ahead, put it in 3D.
Right.
Put it in 3D IMAX and put Happy Meals and all kinds of other crap, you know? but no, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know the Hobbit story as well as the Lord of the Rings story, so it's going to be cool to go into a movie and kind of, like, look at it fresh and
right.
let the story kind of wash over me, other than, like, going into Fellowship, I knew Bing Bang Boom, I knew how each one was going to go, you know, so
yeah
I
don't know, it's hard, because it's one of those franchises that, like, I wish I knew more about, and I feel like because I am such a big fan of horror and sci-fi and fantasy, I probably should have read those books, but then
right.
again, I avoided Harry Potter like the plague, and everybody's like, oh, you're an idiot, Harry Potter's so great, and like, I couldn't get into it, I just, you know, I even went to go see that stupid Narnia blick, and I was just like, this is just a Christian allegory. Why am I wasting my time here?
Right, right. I've always been a big advocate of seeing the movie and then reading the books, which
yeah.
I know is something I get a lot of crap for, but I think,
mm-hmm.
and for me, being an appreciator of movies, it's kind of nice to go in fresh and just see a movie
yeah.
and then go delve into the books, because you're getting a lot more information with books.
I did it when I was younger with, you know, Mario Puzo's The Godfather. Like, I saw the three of them at a young age, and at one point I was like, you know what, I gotta read the book. And then I read the book, and then I went back and I read, you know, Jaws, and then you read Stephen King stuff that gets adapted, and you realize that, you know, the movies are so terrible for most of the Stephen King stuff. It's like, well, you can never tell some of those stories that Stephen King told. Like, you know, people keep saying they're going to turn The Stand into a movie. I was like, good luck, man. You could never pare that down. But it's the same thing with Lord of the Rings. You're never going to make these people happy, because it's such a daunting task to take a piece of literature like
right.
that. And it's special to everyone for different reasons. Like, somebody's favorite character could be, you know, Blippity Bloop or something like that, and the character doesn't get justice in the movie the way that you envisioned it, and then people jump on the internet and like, I don't like this. So
yeah.
it's, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy, but I can't even imagine being hired as a writer for something like that that's that world known and been like, okay, good luck turning this into a movie, boner, you know?
I feel like the fans of, like, Lord of the Rings, though, have been a little more generous than a lot of fan-based, you know, genres, other than the exception of cutting out Tom Bombadil, who was a character
yeah.
in the books who really didn't do that much.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
he got a little crap there early on, but otherwise I feel like, as opposed to, you know, someone different franchise, I feel like Lord of the Rings has done pretty well by the fans.
I'm wondering mm-hmm. if this series would have benefited from having the first three had been, like, cut. You know, if you did, like, a Fellowship Part 1 and Part 2,
right.
instead of just doing it all together, I mean, was there enough cut out to where you could have split the movies, each of them, into two parts?
Yeah.
I think you could have done that.
Well, you know that originally when Miramax bought the rights to the Lord of the Rings, they wanted to do all three movies as one movie.
Oh,
right.
God.
And then, but the Weinstein still got paid when the movies made trillions. They did nothing, and they still got paid. So I was just like, wow, Hollywood is awesome.
Yeah. Hollywood's a crazy place.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, my dealings with people have been lower level people, but I was even saying recently to somebody about, you know, the film that we're working on now, Midnight Show. I was like, if we would have made a movie just about the making of this movie, people wouldn't believe it. Like, some of the stories are crazy. But with Lord of the Rings, though, the fan base does seem like it's a little bit more accepting, only because it's like, people grew up with this, and they're just happy that now their little secret club is being noticed by, like,
right.
other people.
Yeah.
Right.
Because those books have been around since, what, I'm going to sound like an idiot, like the 40s or the 50s, right?
I mean, they're old. They are older books. I mean, it's still modern.
Yeah.
It's considered modern fantasy, but it's not
Yeah.
Definitely not new.
Yeah.
But there's people who picked it up at different times, like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and, you know, it's something that's been with them for a really long time. So when you hear, we're making a movie of it, we're making a movie by someone who grew up loving the thing, it's not like, you know, when Brett Ratner directed X-Men 3, it's like, right. This is a job, so I don't really care about
right.
characters, you know? And I just feel like it comes from a better place when it's somebody like that. Or Del Toro, when he was designing creatures and stuff like that, you know, and you would hear him talk about his love for these things, and it's like, wow, like, I'm excited because you're excited.
Correct.
You know? And I feel like the Lord of the Rings fans, like, I used to date this girl who was a huge... You wouldn't even know it by looking at her, but she was a huge Lord of the Rings fan. And, you know, she was talking to me about the fan bases and stuff like that. And how, yeah, it does seem like they're just happy that other people now see, like, isn't this great? Like, this is what we love, you know? That's kind of cool, where you get, like, a lot of other people who get real shitty about, you know, playing in their backyard. Like, I was doing it recently. We were talking about Dark Knight Rises, and I got real angry about, you know, my hatred for that movie. And people were like, wow, you're... Dork, and I was like, oh my god, I am. Well, you get into the whole, like, Batman wouldn't quit thing, and then, you know, getting into the whole, this would be a good test when the Dark Knight Returns, and I was just like, I'm going to stop now, because I might as well, you know, I'm going to turn my place into going to Lord of the Rings, turn into the Helm of Virgin Keep if I keep talking like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
No ladies are getting past these walls, or will want to.
I think that the Lord of the Rings movies stuck to the storyline a lot better than some. Like, that's what I was really happy about, because, you know...
Yeah, and I mean, you could make fun of the stuff, too, and be like, how come they didn't just ride that big eagle and all that kind of stuff, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, I think it's one of those franchises where it's like, if anything, if you're just a fan of film, you can look at the undertaking of... all these different craftsmen putting together something, like, from how beautiful New Zealand is to all the costumes, all the creatures, to all, like, so many different things went into making this, and it came from this one guy telling these stories, which were huge, and it's, like, it's kind of cool and awe-inspiring. So even if, like, you know, me not knowing the books, I can look at it from a film perspective and go, wow, this is, like, this is an undertaking. This is a labor of love for a lot of people. It's not just, let's go, like Star Wars, yeah, let's just make a racist cartoon rabbit and collect a paycheck. Like, it just seems like there's a lot more love and attention given to these stories than to, like, what the hell was that stupid movie that came out after Lord of the Rings about the dragon with Jeremy Irons? Arago or something like that?
Aragorn. Yeah.
Aragon, something like that. Like,
yeah,
you can tell that was them trying to cash in on Lord of the Rings, and it's just not working. And you say, you know, good fantasy and good, you know, fiction. You know, it's whatever. I'm bumbling today, guys. Sorry.
No, not a big deal. I was just gonna say, you know, I think the one plus side, I mean, you know, obviously we all give Hollywood a lot of crap a lot of times, but I feel like there are people out there who are finally starting to get the idea when you think of, like, Lord of the Rings, or if you think of, like, especially a lot of comic book based movies, they're starting to get the idea that, like, why do we always try to improve these things? Sometimes the story's so strong already, if we just kind of go with it, you're going to have a very cool product, especially comic book movies. You see it a lot in comic book movies where you had a lot of directors like, this would never work in film, so they just totally change it. But now you're starting to see these comic book movies that are much more true to the comic book. And the reason, like, I mean, comic books in general are so, it's such a, and I love comic books, but and a lot of it is very throwaway culture. You know, there's a lot, for every cool character there is, for every Spider-Man, there's like, you know, like 70 Blue Beetles. You know, there's like, for every one.
I kind of like Ted Kord.
Blue Beetle.
You know, there's certain things that will work on the page that would never work. Like, The Dark Knight Returns animated movie, like, the first one was really cool, and the changes that they made, with the exception of taking away the voiceover, worked. And then I was thinking about the second one, and I was like, there's a chick in that story who's got swastikas covering her nipples. How the hell are they going to do that?
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, sticking close to the source material is such a good idea. Like, look at Sin City. Like, for all the people who said, like, that movie shouldn't have worked, but it did, because it's a direct adaptation of a graphic novel, you know, and the stories that have worked of late have been ones that stay close to what, why people gravitate right. towards those characters. You know, don't do Halle Berry as Catwoman.
Right.
It's not a good idea. You know, don't do Shaquille O'Neal as John Henry Irons. It's not a good idea.
Right.
You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Right.
The new Spider-Man movie. Like, as soon as a 100-foot cartoon lizard showed up and started destroying a high school, I was like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah. And I think, but I think that was the point I was making. You know, that these characters, the ones that are really remembered, say the Spider-Mans, or say even like with Lord of the Rings, the Frodos and stuff. There's a reason why these characters are remembered, and that's because the story's already so strong.
Mm-hmm.
So why stray so much from it? You know.
Yeah, and I don't think with, especially with Lord of the Rings, like the Tolkien estate had to sign off on everything, and I feel like that kept them a lot truer to making films that were more... I mean, you still have to make a buck, you know? You're never going to see somebody who's going to be able to tell verbatim the... Like, with Watchmen, you know, that would probably be my closest to Lord of the Rings, because there's so people who get so adamant and vehement about Lord of the Rings. Like, with Watchmen, I read that as a kid, and, like, I knew it inside and out, and I would be the one who's like, they should have made this as, like, 6 2-hour movies on HBO and yada yada, but I feel like he did the best that he could with that material, and you're never going to make everybody happy, but you also have to, like, appease the comic book fans and not have them, you know, bash it, but you also have to bring in people from the outside. That's what Lord of the Rings has to do as well. It's like, look, we really want to make you guys happy who know all these things, but we also have to bring in, you know, the casual Friday night moviegoer and say, hey, this got swords in it and dragons.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, so no matter what you do, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in movies. And it's just like,
right.
I'm at the point now with stuff, it's just like, you know what, if I'm going to pay that much money to go see a movie, I just want to leave entertained.
Right.
You know, that's it. Just, I'm not going to wax philosophical about stuff anymore, because I realize that for every movie out there, somebody's favorite movie is something that I think is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somebody's favorite movie is probably Juana Man. You know? So, if you've never seen Juana Man, go look that up right now.
Yeah, I know what
that
it
got
is.
Made. you know, so it's just like, you know what? I'm going to go see Lord of the Rings. It's a spectacle. It's going to be 3 hours of my life. If I leave that 3 hours and feel I got my money's worth, then good on you, Peter Jackson. You know, that's all you can say anymore. Just entertain me, for God's sake. We're hitting a fiscal cliff.
Yeah.
Well, Newt, before we let you go, anything you want to promote or say about the Midnight Show? How's that been going? Any closure coming for that? When can we start seeing some things?
We got another month or two left to go. Justin and I were just editing Her Time of the Month, which is our 70s female revenge trailer, and
right.
we have a great shot in there where Justin had to keep editing over and over again his sister's boobs being splashed with blood, so that was really enjoyable for me. and then we just re-edited a piece where I play a armless, legless Italian 1970s porn star, and the segment's called Stump Grinder. Which is something that I'm particularly proud of, that I thought of it while I was driving to work, and I saw a sign where they removed trees from your backyard, it just said Stump Grinder. I was like, how great would that be as if it was a 70s porno movie, and the dude's got no arms and no legs, so we green screened out my arms and legs, and I sound like Tommy Wiseau. And when it's all done, it's going to be great. And we finished shooting some stuff with Brenno Floss for the film's wraparound, because he's playing our lead. So I can't wait till it's done. Like I was saying before, entertain me. And that's what we're trying to do, is just like, look, this thing doesn't make any sense. It's, you know, it's a lot of it's the lowest common denominator, but you know what? You're going to leave smiling. So that's essentially it.
Well, that sounds awesome. Yeah, and definitely keep us posted on that, because we're excited to see everything that comes about from the Midnight Show.
I will, and I'll try to be more awake next time I talk to you guys.
No, we appreciate you. Thank you so much, Newt.
Yeah, thanks, Newt.
Hey, guys, have a good show.
All right, take care.
All right, see ya.
All right, so that was pretty cool to have Newt on. He gave us a lot of cool insight into the Lord of the Rings. I wasn't sure if he was a fan, but he turned out he's a big fan of Peter Jackson.
He knows his stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah. I like Peter Jackson because he's kind of got that, like I said when we were talking to Newt, that horror edge to him. You know, you can definitely tell he's done some horror stuff in the past. And he brought some of it into the films. You know, you look at the dead army that Aragorn uses in that battle. They had kind of that really. I mean, remember that scene where they're pushing through all like. It's not. I don't even think it's in the book where like the army. They're like, "Are you going to fight with us?" And then they kind of like disappear. And then all of a sudden, there's just like a waterfall of just skulls that just pours out of them. I don't think that's even in the book. I think it's just Peter Jackson's sensibility of just like he loves that kind of scary, awkward, gory type of thing.
All of the creatures that were supposed to be nasty. Yeah. Were to an incredible degree. I was very excited, like the trolls and stuff like that that they had, you know, doing the heavy lifting for them and everything. They just look nasty. The orcs just look gross. They are scary as hell.
Yeah, they did a good job of that. Going back to this, that one ghost army, that is one of my favorite scenes in Return of the King, where it's you got the boats going by with the people from the south.
Mm-hmm. Come on, you sea rats!
Be prepared to be boarded, and it's just Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas standing on the shore, like, and there's like 30 ships or something like that. And they're like, be prepared to be boarded, and they're just like.
Really?
What? What are you talking about? There's three of you. And so they're like, you and what army? And then he just goes, it's just Aragorn. He's like, this army. And it's just like, all of a sudden there's like ghost army. Can you imagine being on a ship and then like, just a ghost army just jumps on top of your boat?
They wouldn't be able to kill me. My heart would explode just the minute I saw him.
Yeah. That's probably what happened. Most of them just died of fright. Like, holy crap.
That right there was the origination of Rage Quit.
Yeah.
So they're just like, not happening.
Half the guys actually jumped off the boat. Just like, forget it. It's not worth it. Not worth it. I kind of always felt bad about that, though, because it was like, Aragorn kind of let them go, and it was like, did you not know you were going to then fight Sauron in front of the Black Gate? Like, why didn't you just hold on to the dead guys for just like one more battle?
I would have been like, hey, dead guy, take this ring and just go to the gate and just dump it in that lava and then you're done. We'll give you some gold, too.
Yeah, we'll call it evens. Yeah. We'll be squaresy once you throw that in there.
We'll be squaresy.
You know, but I don't understand, like, they knew, you know, if he knew that he was going to be taking on this one last battle. Like,
unless it was, you know, we need you for one bet. He got to pick one bet on this. Maybe so.
The whole thing was those guys, you know, broke their vows to their kings and whatnot, and that's why they
during were that first fight with Sauron or something like that, like they didn't they were chicken, they didn't show up, so they had to live inside the mountain until
So they were cursed, and then he drew them back, you know, pulling on that vow that he made, and when he pulled them out, he told them, he was like, you know, if you do this, then you're square. And I'll release you.
Yeah.
And so he had to keep his word. He's Aragorn.
Yeah, that's true. It's just another one of those sequences where, you know, like, I think because of the way Peter Jackson is with his kind of dark horror sensibility, he was able to kind of lend something even better to the films, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about video games, because that's kind of what we do. I've played a couple Lord of the Rings video games. Have you guys delved into Lord of the Rings games?
Really the Third Age. That's really the only one I never beat it. I got into it because I'm an RPG fan. So I was like, oh, turn-based. Take me through Lord of the Rings. I'm like, this is going to be kind of cool. And then I let somebody borrow it. I never got it back. So.
Oh, well, that kind of sucks. Third Age was cool, though, because it was like a second fellowship that was kind of like the first fellowship.
Yeah.
Kind of, I think, where they were like, behind the original following behind them, kind of cleaning up their messes and stuff like that. So
yeah, the place I got, I got to Moria when they fought that creature from the lake. That was where I got to. I couldn't beat that boss fight.
Oh, okay. It was a fun game. It was different, and then that's okay. You know.
Yeah.
I played the Fellowship, which I don't really remember much, and I played the Two Towers, which had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Hack and slash.
Yeah, it's hack and slash. It's awesome.
It reminded me a lot of Hunter the Reckoning.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it reminded me of. Just, like, hordes of orcs.
And you could level up your characters in that, too, as well. Yeah.
You know, so I was loving it.
Yeah, yeah. It was hack and slash, but almost had that kind of action RPG element to it. and that, you know, you're going out there and you're just taking out characters and stuff like that. And they even improved it with Return of the King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was kind of cool. And with Return of the King was cool, and that one's for also for PlayStation 2.
Oh, I played that
one. That one was cool because you could then if you played through the boards, you could then go back and replay boards to level up your characters, but you could play as any character you want. So you could be Aragorn going into, like, Mordor trying to destroy the ring or something like that. And it was very fun, though, with the elements they added. It was cheesy because, you know, a lot of the storyline wouldn't make sense at all, but the fact that you could do that, you know, made it kind of fun. I kind of like that element. But there's a lot of older games that fans may not realize. I mean, one of the ones we discussed was there was a game called Shadowfax for the Commodore 64, which was essentially kind of like a side-scrolling version of Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Not a lot to it, but you were Gandalf the White riding Shadowfax, just shooting Nazgul.
Show me the meaning of Heimstar.
If I remember the game, it felt like there were more than 9 Nazgul.
Yeah. I think I saw in the video, at least 20 or 30 of them died.
They were kind of just a continuous Nazgul.
So I guess that's just, you just keep going until one gets by you or you get hit.
Or maybe they just keep merry-go-rounding around, you
that
know?
That would get old pretty quick.
You know?
Yeah.
I know there's a Hobbit game.
Yeah.
For the NES or Super Nintendo. I think it's for the NES.
Well, there was a Lord of the Rings game for Super Nintendo as well. It was Lord of the Rings Volume 1 for the Super Nintendo. Never came out with a Volume 2 or 3 or 4 or anything else, but there was a Lord of the Rings Volume 1 for Super Nintendo.
Which
gets decent. Again, it's an action RPG, which makes sense. I think that lends itself best to the Lord of the Rings stories.
Yeah, definitely.
But similar type of idea, you know, your character walking around a map, you know, and it tells some of the story. You're Frodo, you know, for a large portion of it, and yeah, it was kind of neat. But for the most part, for me, I would say I'm with Shane on this. I think that the PlayStation, the movie adaptions were kind of fun. It was there was no Fellowship PlayStation. I shouldn't say there were Fellowship games, but the official movie adaptions, there was never a Fellowship movie adaptation.
Yeah.
It was Two Towers had a bunch of scenes from Fellowship, and then a lot of scenes from Two Towers, and then there was a Return of the King game. And if you get a chance, I would say to our fans, if you get a chance to try either of those games, it's killing brain cells.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But if you, that's fun to do sometimes. I'd recommend those two. I really would.
Have either of you played the MMO?
I have not played the MMO.
Yeah, maybe. Actually, I have played Lord. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how did you?
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really well done because it takes you through the whole story. You know, you start out, you make your character, and the quest, the main quest line takes you to the books. So about, you know, you get to level maybe 10, 15, and you get a quest to where you have to go to the, to Bree.
Yeah.
And meet up with Aragorn.
Correct.
And then you start doing some quests there, and then I think another expansion just came out. I believe it just opened up Mordor, where you can actually go and the game's been out for several years.
Wow, that's cool.
So they had a Riders of Rohan expansion, and so it's just really a really really cool game. You know, in the classes, there's a burglar class. It's a very obviously a very very group oriented game.
Yeah.
You know, each class works together, and you chain off these skill attacks,
right,
where you can either do damage, gain life, gain mana back, stuff like that. You know, magic power, and it was a good time.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was.
Has any play to delve into like the newer games and that type of thing? Has anyone tried out War of the North? I know that's a game that's kind of popular.
I haven't played any since Return of the King.
Yeah. No, it was fun. The other one that I know Big Girl's looking forward to is Lego Lord of the Rings.
I gotta
play that.
I wonder if they'll bust out a Lego Hobbit. I'm sure they probably
will. Oh, yeah, sure. But I'm assuming once all the three movies are done.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. But I would say, you know, whereas, you know, with some franchises, there are a lot of video games out there. Lord of the Rings, we're seeing more. We're seeing more now. I mean, obviously there's some older games, but we're starting to see some more love to Lord of the Rings. So if you're really into Lord of the Rings and you haven't delved into all of these different games, I would recommend that our fans go into and checking some of these out. They're at least, I would say the majority of them are at least worth seeing and trying out.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
So That's pretty cool. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on and talking about this stuff, because this kind of stuff's kind of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Matt, before we leave, why don't you do your thing you always do for us, which is tell us all the different... Okay, that's kind of weird. Why don't you tell us all the different ways that our fans can reach out to us and tell us maybe a little bit about their love of the Lord of the Rings franchise.
Yeah, send us an email at famicomflashbacks@yahoo.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Famicom Flash. Be sure to follow us on our blog site, famicomflashbacks.wordpress.com, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is very important. Yeah. And send us your comments, yeah, like you said, about the favorite, about your favorite Lord of the Rings movies, your favorite games, any particular game in, that you like the most.
Yeah.
And also, thanks to Newt, if you want to go ahead and see what he's up to, check them out on YouTube, Underbelly on Facebook and YouTube, and his project, The Midnight Show. So go ahead and give him your likes as well.
Yeah, because he's awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah, really good guy.
All right, so until next time, let's keep retro gaming alive.
Peace.